Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Good morning, everybody. So this talk is part of a regular series that we have here at the Zen Center, My Zen Life, where people who've been around for a while or have some experience talk about their Zen lives. I always love this series. I love to hear my Sangha brothers and sisters and what's going on with them. So I really like this series, and I hope you'll find this one interesting. So when the June newsletter went to press, I still hadn't figured out what to talk about, so there was no title on the thing except My Zen Life. But I've decided I'd like to share the story of my one and only koan. So my title this morning is How Joshu Sasaki Roshi Gave Me Back God. Very highfalutin. So here it is. It's kind of a personal story, so it's just my own point of view, and I hope that nobody finds it too heretical in any way. So the first part of the story is a very clear sort of prelude to my Zen life. Happened a long time ago when I was about 12. And I suddenly realized one day that I didn't believe in God, at least not the sort of guy in the sky they taught us about in Sunday school, and that probably about 90% of the people in our culture at that time sort of vaguely believed in one way or another. So that was in the mid-60s, and it was a time of a lot of social and cultural shakeup. Some of you were there. And part of that shakeup was a lot of heated discussion about God and his existence. It was a time when society was becoming much more secular. World War II had sort of upended the whole world. And there were a lot of theologians, some more radical than others, who were working to make God more relevant in this newly more secular world. Here's an example. I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember this. This is a Time magazine cover from April 1966. I remember it very clearly. Some of you guys do. And as well as the shocked reaction that it caused all around the world. Anyway, part of this whole context was sort of the background for my realization, I think, that I didn't believe in God. People all over the world had strong reactions. I remember I lived in a small town in Illinois at the time. It was quite the discussions. Most thought that this was shocking, heretical, blasphemous, frightening, disgusting, and that this whole discussion was leaving people feeling angry, lost, hopeless, abandoned, and in the dark. But oddly, I didn't feel any of those things when I realized that I didn't believe in God. Instead, and I remember it so clearly, I suddenly had this feeling of lightness and brightness, a huge sense of relief, a feeling of release, of joy, really. So I think the way I thought of it was, instead of God in human form, we had this real universe, not shaped or constrained by any human-made categories or parameters at all. So no sin, no judgment, no good, no bad, all those things that weigh our hearts down. There was nothing pure and nothing impure, like the Heart Sutra says. It was just itself. Just this astounding, mysterious universe, worlds within worlds within worlds, dynamic, constantly changing, humming with this infinite potential, energy, and creativity, and running according to its own beautifully perfect, powerful forces. Billions and billions of beings coming and going every second. And we humans, were a part of that, just like everything else. I was so happy. No sin, swimming around like a little fish in the universe. I remember that feeling so well. Well, the feeling faded, although I remember it as a sort of guiding light. And life muddled on, so fast forward many years until about 16 years ago. And one day in my lunch hour, was in St. Paul, Minnesota, I walked into a Zen center that was near my office. It was a Soto Zen center. I took an introduction to Zen class that winter, and I got the feeling of being back on the track of something that was related to that flood of realization from childhood. Some kind of truth, it felt like. So let's fast forward some more words, and we get on with this koan story here. I had moved my family to Vashon and been so happy and relieved to find this young Zen center here and to meet Koshin and Liden. Kaj and David were there, and Fan, and so I started practicing with those guys. Over the years, Koshin would talk about his experiences as a monk at Mount Baldy and about his teacher, Sasaki Roshi, still talks about him, of course. I remember when Koshin went down to Los Angeles for the Roshi's 100th birthday celebration. So I was pretty intrigued by this 100-year-old Japanese Zen master, as you can imagine. So just a little bit about Joshu Sasaki Roshi for those that don't know. He was born in 1907 in Japan. He became an ordained monk at age 13 under his teacher Joten Soko Miura, whom he followed to Myoshin-ji, the head temple of one of the largest branches of Rinzai. He became a Roshi in 1947, was the abbot of a couple of temples, and then in 1962, when he was about 50 years old, he decided to travel to the United States and teach students here in the West. He founded a Zen center in Los Angeles. Rinzai-ji taught at Mount Baldy and Bodhimanda and lots of other Zen centers for the next 50 years. Here he is. I'm going to pass it around. Stare into his eyes, William. So during his time, 50 years, he made about 20 Osho's, Liden, is that correct? Something like that. Osho is a full Rinzai priest, teaching priest. Of course, Koshin is one of them. And other teachers that we've had here, Eshin also, and Giko, right, and Hosen. So they're all Sasaki Roshi's students. And he died in 2014 at the age of 107. Anyway, so when I heard that Sasaki Roshi had turned 100, I decided I needed to meet this guy and that I better hurry up and do that. So I went to a session where he was teaching at Rinzai-ji in Los Angeles. Liden came too, thank goodness for that. I think the Roshi was 101 at the time, so that was 9 or 10 years ago. Koshin prepped me thoroughly, including teaching me how to bow in the Sanzen room, and also to bring lots of those little cans of really strong coffee to stash away in my room. So it was the first 5-day session I had ever been to, and it was just scary and bewildering. The Zendo at Rinzai-ji is huge and vast. There are about 40 people there, all wearing black robes. There were a lot of rules and forms that I hadn't seen before. I got corrected a few times. And everything, especially the chanting, was really, really fast. But the biggest difference from what I was used to was that everybody had to go into the Sanzen room, which is a teacher interview with the Roshi, with the koan, 2 or 3 times every day. Well, this was really terrifying. Going into this room alone with this small but mountainous man, these sharp black eyes, there were four or five new people, and he gave us all the same koan. And here it is. I really need the clappers for this, but let's just do this. Where are you? At that instant, where are you? That was our koan. So there were a really miserable couple of days. I had a lot of pain. Everything was confusing. But the worst was going into Sanzen. It was just awful. I had no idea what to do. I couldn't understand what the Roshi was saying to me. It was sort of hard to understand his English. I just dreaded it. In fact, I tried to sneak out of it and just not go, hoping that there were so many people that nobody would notice. But the Jiki and the Joko, they caught me really soon, and they lassoed me out of the Kinhin line, and they said very kindly but firmly, Sanzen is not optional. You have to go in there. So I would go into Sanzen and do some ridiculous shenanigans. I didn't know what to do. I had no idea what to do. And then finally, one day when he gave me the koan, where are you? I just threw up my hands in despair and I wailed. I said, I don't know. And he said, so kindly, you are with God, your creator. You are with God, your creator. And for one small little stunned minute, I knew exactly what he meant. All those old ideas about God and how I didn't believe in him just fell away, and there was just this vision of egolessness and unity. I'm pretty sure my jaw dropped. Anyway, that's the story of my one koan. From then on, I had fun going into Sanzen. I got the feeling that Roshi enjoyed it too. So now I feel increasingly, so lately actually, that the direction of the rest of my Zen life is in a way to crack that koan. I want to feel what it's like to be with God, my creator. I want to know what it feels like to feel my heart unclenched to open. I want to know what it's like to be able to act, boom, right out of my true nature, my Buddha nature, whatever you want to call it, that we all share. That would be knowing what true compassion feels like. I got to say, I want this stuff. I know we're not supposed to want this stuff. We're supposed to do Zazen for Zazen's sake. But I don't want to wallow around in greed and anger and ignorance for the rest of my life. I had to laugh on Wednesday night during our discussion from the book. There is a story of this old guy who went into his teacher and he said, you know, I'm getting old and I want to be enlightened before I die. What do I do? And of course, the teacher scolded him and said, oh, no, that's not what we do. We do Zazen for its own sake, not because we want to gain anything, blah, 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 blah. But I feel for that old guy, you know? I'm kind of an old guy myself. And I want, I don't say enlightenment exactly, but just a glimpse. I want a taste of what it's like to truly realize impermanence, my universal self, our universal self, our Buddha nature, and the unity of all things. Those are fine up here, but it's hard to get them down here, you know? So I would like to be able to live and act out of these realizations, which is really the cool part, I think. Maybe I won't get to that point, but maybe at least like the old guy in the story, to die with those realizations anyway. So anyway, I guess that just means more Zazen, more Zazen. And it's hard, it is hard, but I have to say that, you know, it's really true that the Sangha is the thing here. I don't know what we would do without the encouragement and support of our teachers and all of us here today working together. You know, I just think sometimes to look at everything that people pour into this practice here, it's just really, it's really inspiring. I think of Koshin's vigor and his energy and his good Dharma talks, you know, and Genko teaching us in a session in the middle of her cancer treatments. I mean, Jim fixing everything like a maniac all the time. Bernetta chanting her heart out. You know, Stephen coming, driving all this way to sit with us. Beth pursuing her chaplaincy. I loved in her talk when she said that it made her want to practice like her hair was on fire. It's just every person that comes to sit in this room, every time you do that, you're helping everybody else. You're a bodhisattva, man. You know? You're not just sitting for yourself. You're helping somebody else sit, too. So, thank you all. It's so great to work together on our Zen life. And may we all practice like our hair is on fire.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.